This is Matt Wells with UN News. With around 50 million people in need of assistance, the Democratic Republic of the Congo is one of the biggest humanitarian crises in the world. It is also one of the most underfunded. In an interview with UN News' Daniel Johnson for World Humanitarian Day on Wednesday, veteran UN aid coordinator Diego Zarrilla explains what's most important for Congolese communities today.
The most pressing challenge for me as Deputy Humanitarian Coordinator in the DRC is to continue to bring to the fore the huge humanitarian crisis that is happening in the DRC. It's been going on for a long time, 25 years, but in reality it's not one crisis, but a multitude of crises in a country which is the size of Western Europe. And this crisis actually affects about 15 million people, and we are trying to target roughly 9 million people. This is one of the major humanitarian crises in the world, and we need greater support.
Now, we hear a lot about the Ebola crisis, the outbreak in the east of the country. Now it's in the west of the country. On top of that, you've got maybe as many as 100 armed groups in the east and the southeast, and you've got the COVID outbreak. So where do you start in a country as vast, as you say, as the DR Congo?
Well, I think that by starting by realizing that when we talk about the Congo, you're talking about almost a continent. So we need to understand that, yes, there is all these different situations because each of the provinces have the size of a normal country. I mean, Ituri is bigger than Ireland. Tanganyika is twice as big as Greece. So if you start wrapping your head around that, then you understand that there will be a multitude of crises in a country that has 75% of people that live under the poverty line. You were mentioning Ebola. Ebola is a very deadly virus. It's very contagious, and that's why it's so scary to people, because it can actually spread quite quickly. The DRC has vanquished the 10th epidemic of Ebola. There were about 2,200 people that died of it, which is terrible, but it's very small in comparison with the number of people that die from other causes anyway in the DRC. But unfortunately, a new epidemic of Ebola is actually spreading now in the west of the country, and we're doing the best to provide support to the government to contain it.
Yes. Now, you were mentioning that the Ebola victims, yes, that is a tragedy, but there are other endemic diseases, cholera, measles, yellow fever, to name but a few. But really, particularly, we're talking because of World Humanitarian Day, which is celebrated on the 19th of August. And as UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has said, it's time to honour the work of humanitarians everywhere. Can you tell me, Diego Zarrilla, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, who some of these real-life heroes are? What are the extraordinary things they are doing right now today?
The real-life heroes are the frontline workers of humanitarian action. I mean, we provide support, we try to raise awareness, we try to mobilize resources, we try to provide the systems to enable them to work, to do the work. But the real-life heroes are the frontline workers, are those health workers that go out every day and actually try to cure those diseases that you were, or people that were suffering from the diseases that you mentioned, are the people that are conducting safe and dignified burials in the case of the Ebola patient, are the matrons that work in the clinics, in the booths with very little support. I mean, are these infirmiers that take bicycles and drive 5 or 10 kilometers in the mud to be able to vaccine children. I mean, those are the real-life heroes, not to mention the Congolese themselves that receive most of the displaced people. Of the 5.5 million people displaced in the Congo, about 85% of them actually live in host families, pushing those host families further to the brink of poverty. So I think we need to recognize that this solidarity, which is what fuels humanitarian action, is actually in greater display amongst the Congolese themselves than the kind of support that we can try to bring. But I think that we need to recognize that they're the real heroes today.
Over and above the obvious need for cash and investment in humanitarian issues, what would you say is really crucial? Is it jobs? Is it education? Or is it food, water? Or is it ensuring people's safety?
Thank you very much. I mean, I think the key element to all of this is governance, and governance that brings peace and security, stability, so that people actually can go about living their lives. I mean, I don't think we realize that at an individual level what it means to live in a context where you have absolutely no recourse to the state as a means to protect you, even from the very basic aggressions. So I think it all starts by having good governance, which means having systems in which people can actually participate and feel empowered. And from there on, they take on with their lives. So actually in the DRC, I mean, one of the messages is that we humanitarians actually work towards not being important anymore. I mean, we would like not to be here anymore, and we would like that the many initiatives to develop peaceful processes, virtuous processes in the provinces actually take root, some of them succeed, and that from then on we can move on towards supporting development process, which is what people really want in their lives.
I mean, it must be a desperate situation sometimes with a lack of resources. How do you square that circle? What do you say to communities who are crying out for you?
It is difficult because we have made an appeal for about $2 billion to provide for the most basic fundamental and to cater for the most basic fundamental needs of people. And that appeal is dramatically underfunded. We only get about 20% of that appeal. We hope to get more. But that means that we will only be able to cater for about 1 out of 5 people that we, to whom we that are looking at us to actually provide for assistance. So that forces to a very strenuous focalization of assistance that goes to the detriment of ensuring the rights of everyone. So it is difficult to start to determine by where do you start, and when you actually focus assistance somewhere, then of course it's to the detriment of assistance that should have gone somewhere else. We have a criteria of vulnerability. I mean, we target our assistance professionally, but it is definitely difficult in an environment in which resources are much less than the actual needs that we would like to be able to cover.
And very last question to you. Because of the COVID coronavirus outbreak, has it meant that people are being left behind, or are they being scooped up somehow?
Well, definitely. I mean, the COVID has had a huge impact on all of us and has a huge impact also in the DRC. Not so much by the number of people that have been recognized as being infected, which so far is less than 10,000. Of course, it is to be said that the testing capacities are not very high, so the real numbers are probably much higher. But there's been, like in every other country, there's been a series of measures that have been taken in order to prevent the spread of COVID, which have had very bad consequences for the economy and for the actual mobility of people and even the mobility of humanitarian workers. So that means that a lot of the humanitarian assistance that would normally have been provided has been provided to a lesser degree because of these limitations in movement that have been imposed that are being slowly lifted, and we will have to see whether there's not a second wave of COVID that comes and hit the DRC too.